The ripple in a pond is what we are seeing today as more and more documents and newspapers written in the Hawaiian language are, one, being translated into English, and two, being digitized for new eyes to look at. We invited Puakea Noglemeyer, noted scholar in Hawaiian language, in for a chat. Thanks to the efforts of Awaiaulu, a project to translate and publish Olelo Hawaii, the new body of work is being produced. We invited him into our studios after interviewing several authors of new books that use the Hawaiian language resources.
I am totally enthused every day, really. It just keeps unfolding. It's what I've been playing with for a long time, and myself and others, and just to see it become integrated into all different fields, incorporated into new work, there's discovery every day. And I wouldn't say just discovery, there's like added layers to what we already knew. So to have that be richer all the time is really exciting.
One new book is King Kalakaua Reclaimed, you know, that bit of history.
Well, and it's the issue is that, you know, we actually, in the sweep of time, we almost receive a distilled narrative, and it's from what was at hand. And certain things were at hand, and Kalakaua's story was rather well known. But Tiffany Ng, of course, reached out and wanted to look into all the Hawaiian accounts. Did they match up? Did they add material? And I think her first thought was, the flip side will be available there. But actually, I was on her committee. And what she found out was that, no, the variability, the nuanced sort of national relationship with Kalakaua was available there. So it just added all kinds of layers of the history. He's on the throne for, 26 years, 28 years, 76 to 91. So it's a long run, and it's a varied reign, and, you know, different political settings, different economic settings. So she was able to sort of enhance that picture a great deal.
Now, you were able to really just kind of crack open the egg, you know?
In so many ways, this is all a side product of sort of the language revitalization that starts in the 70s, and it puts lots of enthusiasm and passion and people in place. And so you get people who are fluent falling into all different sort of corners of what's right here. And so we started in developing materials for the immersion, or not just immersion schools, but especially for the adults. We started to look to the Hawaiian newspapers. As a teacher, I always knew they were there. They were sort of an obscure, huge body of stuff. You dig around, it's like going into a library with no lights on. You fumble around, you find something good, you might use it for 5 years, but never even see what's around it. So when we started to really pull materials, we pulled the Kamakau material. Suddenly we were looking at what was around that material, what it was, what was the context, what else was there? And that just led to this sort of whole bunch of bulldogs sniffing around in the, that was in the early 90s when we realized how large that was and how untouched it was. It really started a movement about 2000 to make this available. I actually have sort of a funny vignette about Duane Steele is who had pushed us to publish and made us, you know, made it possible for us to pull things from the newspapers, which is what exposed us to that bigger context. When we realized how important it was, he was just adamant about this has got to be made available. The process of OCR, optical character recognition, had been around since the early 90s. It totally didn't work on Hawaiian newspapers because it was an 80% error rate. They were badly printed 150 years ago. You know, it wasn't working. So he says, well, let's use the Ni'iho population, who is underutilized for their great ability with language, and have them type those newspapers. So I get sent to Kauai with a microfilm reader and a Macintosh to do typing tests on the Niihauans to see, to let's gather some figures. What would that take? What would that take? Now, and not to say anything negative about a whole population, but the ones that I tested were terrible typists. And when we did the math, it was going to be like 300 years to be able to type in what had only taken 100 years to type script or typeset with lead letters. So we were still fumbling with those figures and wondering how to sort of incorporate that when a new kind of OCR became available. And that had been used on the Maori newspapers. It was a more trainable OCR. It was called Avifine Reader. And that really cracked open our ability to digitize material and make it word searchable. It started with a project at Alulike. It went to Ho'olaupa'i, was established. Kauisai Dudua ran that for like 9 years with skilled operators who could sort of clarify, set margins, correct text as it was coming out, whatnot. All the kids who worked on that project became the leaders that you're seeing out there today. But the project itself, we did some 15,000 pages. That's only about, 10% of the whole or something. But in the course of 7-8 years, it made it so apparent. Making that word searchable made this incredible information available. And that showed proof of concept, and we've never stopped. And when I say we, I mean there's a real big cluster of folk who support, engage, make it happen.
Right, because access is key. I mean, it's one thing to translate, but to be able to get it in everybody's hands.
Yeah. And so, initially all of that was put up on Ulukau, which is the Hawaiian library. And then OHA finally invested a great deal in their Papakilo database, their information, knowledge well sort of thing. And they have absorbed all of that available data into an accessible platform. And they keep honing that down. But I'm very pleased that they invested that much in just making access. That's huge. Now, it could sit there and nobody touch it for a long time, but we did another. It's a long history and there's been a bunch of dust-ups, but in 2011 we did Ike Kuokoa, which was a huge collaborative crowdsourcing typing project. And partly that was to create more available digital material. But really the main goal was to inform people that this resource exists.
So how much more needs to be translated?
Well, translated, there's still, when I did, I did a dissertation on this, and in 2003 I said maybe 2 or 3% has been translated. 97% of 1.5 million pages sits basically untouched. Those figures have changed, but not a great deal. Because even though it's far more accessible, there's not a great deal of translation going on. Making the digital access is going to be step one, and it's probably half done, perhaps. There's still 50,000 of 125,000 pages that have not been found. So part of that is locating the originals, getting good copies of them up on digital form, and then you can begin translating.
Are they all at the State Archives?
No, absolutely not. 75,000 of 125,000 are sort of scattered among the collections here. There's probably another 4,000 or 5,000 pages that are in the collections but have not yet been digitized.
Okay, in other places, like where?
That would be, 4,000 or 5,000 here, between the Bishop Museum, the State Archives, the Historical Society, Mission Children's, et cetera, maybe some in private collections. But we're really hopeful that much of that other 50,000 pages is out there in collections around the world. We went last year to Harvard and to Washington to go through the collections there. We found a newspaper that had never even been charted. And there wasn't an original copy because the microfilm movement was partly to make space on shelves. So they had microfilmed this entire newspaper and then thrown it away, apparently. But there's a microfilm extant. We're hopeful to keep finding at least pieces of those, because the Hawaiian newspapers were sent around the world. Hawaiians were around the world. And so, a Hawaiian in Canada would subscribe to the home newspaper. Hopefully some of those made their way into either private collections or larger archival collections.
I guess started to think about this because of the bicentennial of the missionaries coming.
Yes. In prep for the bicentennial, we were engaged to translate the letters of the chiefs to the missionary leaders, the first couple of companies. It was an incredible resource that had lain there for nearly 200 years and had never been translated. Most of them had never been done. So there's material that sits there. And that was really a rich product. It sponsored all kinds of different research, but making that available in English. So just getting the digitizing done is huge. The translating of it is almost a different package. It'll happen as different research is being done, like whether it's surfing or whether it's hula or whether it's politics and others, some wonderful stuff being done in economics, lots of science stuff, as sort of piecemealing bodies of translations. So the Institute up at UH, Institute of Hawaiian Language Research and Translation, has worked with NOAA, Sea Grant, Jaimar, and they've done a lot of science stuff, and there's such a body of things there. College of Ed, also sort of related to science, has been doing a block of translations to use in curriculum. I'm real hopeful that some of the humanities and literature, and well, we pulled literature things, so those are translated, still very much piecemeal. There's no giant translation effort underfoot. I do want to say Awaiolu, which is the nonprofit that I run, we try and train fluent scholars today to handle that material, because what we're teaching at the university doesn't cover the historical language. Much of the revitalization movement, well, most of it, actually all came out of pre this kind of history. None of this was available. And so they're not terribly familiar with. When I was teaching at UH, you'd get fourth year Hawaiian language students or Hawaiian studies students who couldn't name the eight sovereigns. And it's just, you know, it wasn't incorporated. Hawaiian history was not really incorporated. So I train, and these are fluent, most of them have a master's in Hawaiian, or they've been teaching in immersion. And so we train them to handle historical material and learn the historical context, there's a whole different vocabulary that isn't incorporated into what we teach today. There's grammar they've never met up with. So it's a really rich process of expanding their exposure, but it also brings out those materials. We've always focused on tomes, so we do what we felt was important for us today. So the works of Kamakau, all of that, we bothered to translate, and we're working on getting it published in English and Hawaiian. The works of John Papa'i'i, but we've always taken on these great hi'iaka. You might have seen the hi'iaka. So getting something that's really meaty.
Right, the body of work.
And get it out in Hawaiian and in English. Now, we just turned that a little bit on its head. We have the same, 14 of the team that we just finished with those tomes. And we just launched a new project for the next 2 years. They're taking on themes. So there's four teams of three, and each one has a single thing. One of them has Ke Kuanoʻa. Matayo Ke Kuanoʻa was a noble, and he served the government for the reigns of five king sovereigns. The 1864 Constitution, which is an interesting foundation. Liliʻu's journeys to Washington, and Joseph Nawahi. Those four. Now, on Matayo Ke Kuanoʻa, they may well pull 3,000 or 4,000 Hawaiian references about this man that have never been incorporated. They'll only be able to translate 200 or 300 of those. But we'll have the whole body of it in a database, translations of 200 or 300, and summaries of much of the rest, so that that field of knowledge will be more available. And it's very limited. I mean, it's Ke Kuanoʻa. It's not Ke Kuanoʻa and everybody around him, or the history of his time. It's here's a window into this. It expands their exposure, as they're doing government docs, letters, manuscripts. They've always been handed the material they translate. At this point, they're learning to research, find it.
What about funding in order to keep this going?
Oh, of course, the nightmare of funding is that we're pretty driven, so we simply do it. We scramble around and we cobble together funding. And in this one, because we didn't gel the project in the standard timelines of most of the funding agencies, we really were in trouble, and we thought we might have to simply stop. But we had an angel step in and give us the first year's funding, basically. It's a two-year project. We're still applying for and seeking funds. So if anyone's an angel out there, the budget for 2 years is almost $1 million. It's $900,000 to keep 14 skilled people on a simple stipend. It's not like anybody's being paid well. I'm the mentor in the project. We have a single staff that runs a big office and manages all these.
And how far are you into this two-year project?
We just launched it August 31st. We are, and we're really now, it's just getting its traction. We met last night and I said, I could not be more enthused. It's hard work. It's a lot of hours, and it's so rewarding. Every single step of it has been really, really rich. So,
and
see
so
this
worthwhile.
Smile.
It's so, so worthwhile.
And we're going to be able to produce. I mean, there's material that probably won't reach its bounds, you know, for the way it gets integrated into, you know, history, education, knowledge, just general knowledge, language, for a generation or more. I mean, we're going to have raw materials that'll be available to people that have never been accessible. They can be integrated. We need to expand all the time.
I mean, that is just so exciting. I mean, just to know, like you said, what you've cracked open and what's possible.
Yes, and our work, I think, really encourages the folks that are on the front lines, the ones that are in the classrooms at the university, that are in the immersion schools. This enables them in a great way to really build. Otherwise, most teachers teach what they learned before they started teaching. It's really hard to expand that. So we've got to step beyond and really make this as accessible as we can. So making it accessible in Hawaiian and English fosters both Hawaiian and English speakers. Because a lot of this stuff is fuzzy, even to a fluent Hawaiian speaker. So having an English on the side can be a really invaluable resource.
Oh, yeah.
The flip side is people who are using just the English are exposed more and more and more to that Hawaiian, and it really builds their sort of familiarity, takes down some of the barriers.
Yeah, and the body of knowledge that you're creating, too.
We're excited.
That was Puakea Nogelmeyer talking about a new body of work that is emerging thanks to his efforts to translate Hawaiian language resources. And yes, if his voice sounds familiar to you, he is the voice on the bus.